Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole friend, and sole mourner. And even Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event that he was an excellent man of business on the very day of the funeral and solemnized it with an undoubted bargain. Scrooge, a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner, hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire, secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say, with gladsome looks, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what it was o'clock. But what did Scrooge care? To edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance, was the very thing he liked. Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting-house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal. The city clocks had only just gone three, but it was quite dark already. It had not been light all day, and candles were flaring in the windows of the neighbouring offices, like ruddy smears upon the palpable brown air. The fog came pouring in at every chink and keyhole, and was so dense without that although the court was of the narrowest, the houses opposite were mere phantoms. The door of Scrooge's counting-house was open that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who, in a dismal little cell beyond, was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so very much smaller that it looked like one coal. But he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal-box in his own room, and so surely as the clerk came in with the shovel, the master predicted that it would be necessary for them to part. Wherefore the clerk put on his white comforter and tried to warm himself at the candle, in which effort, not being a man of strong imagination, he failed. "A Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" cried a cheerful voice. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that this was the first intimation he had of his approach.
"Da," said Scrooge, "humbug."
He had so heated himself with rapid walking in the fog and frost, this nephew of Scrooge's, that he was all in a glow. His face was ruddy and handsome, his eyes sparkled, and his breath smoked.
"Christmas a humbug, Uncle?" said Scrooge's nephew. "You don't mean that, I'm sure." "I do. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry, you're poor enough?" "Come then," returned the nephew gaily. "What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough."
Scrooge, having no better answer ready on the spur of the moment, said "Da" again, and followed it up by "Humbug."
"Don't be cross, Uncle," said the nephew. "What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas! Out upon Merry Christmas! What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money, a time for finding yourself a year older, but not an hour richer? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart, he should."
"Uncle," pleaded the nephew.
"Nephew," returned the uncle sternly, "keep Christmas in your way and let me keep it in mine."
"Keep it?" repeated Scrooge's nephew. "But you don't keep it."
Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you, much good has it ever done you.
There are many things from which I might have derived good, by which I have not profited, I dare say, returned the nephew. Christmas among the rest, but I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time, when it has come round, as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time, the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year, when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely, and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good, and I say, God bless it. The clerk involuntarily applauded. Becoming immediately sensible of the impropriety, he poked his fire and extinguished the last frail spark forever.
Let me hear another sound from you, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation. You're quite a powerful speaker, sir, he added, turning to his nephew. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow. Scrooge said that he would see him. Yes, indeed he did. He went the whole length of the expression and said that he would see him in that extremity first. But why? Cried Scrooge's nephew. Why?
Why did you get married? Said Scrooge.
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love.
As if that were the only one thing in the world more ridiculous than a Merry Christmas.
Good afternoon.
Nay, Uncle, but you never came to see me before that happened. Why give it as a reason for not coming now?
Good afternoon, said Scrooge.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute. We have never had any quarrel, to which I have been a party, but I have made the trial in homage to Christmas, and I'll keep my Christmas humour to the last. So, a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
His nephew left the room without an angry word notwithstanding. He stopped at the outer door to bestow the greetings of the season on the clerk, who, cold as he was warmer than Scrooge, for he returned them cordially.
There's another fellow, muttered Scrooge, who overheard him. My clerk with 15 shillings a week, and a wife and a family. Talking about a Merry Christmas. I'll retire to Bedlam.
This lunatic, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in. They were portly gentlemen, pleasant to behold, and now stood with their hats off in Scrooge's office. They had books and papers in their hands and bowed to him. "Scrooge and Marley's, I believe," said one of the gentlemen, referring to his list. "Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?"
"Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night."
"We have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner," said the gentleman, presenting his credentials. It certainly was, for they had been two kindred spirits. At the ominous word liberality, Scrooge frowned and shook his head, and handed the credentials back.
"At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir."
"Are there no prisons?"
asked Scrooge. "But plenty of prisons."
"And the union workhouses? Are they still in operation?"
They are still. I wish I could say they were not.
"The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigour, then?"
"Both very busy, sir."
"Oh, I was afraid, from what you said at first, that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course. I'm very glad to hear it." under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, a few of us are endeavouring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
Oh. You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Oh, many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Besides, excuse me, I don't know that.
But you might know it.
It's not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Seeing clearly that it would be useless to pursue their point, the gentleman withdrew. Scrooge resumed his labours with an improved opinion of himself and in a more facetious temper than was usual with him. At length, the hour of shutting up the counting-house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool and tacitly admitted the fact to the expectant clerk, who instantly snuffed his candle out and put on his hat.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose?
If quite convenient, sir.
It is not convenient. And it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound.
The clerk smiled faintly.
And yet, you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
The clerk observed that it was only once a year.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December,
said Scrooge, buttoning his greatcoat to the chin.
But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier next morning.
The clerk promised that he would, and Scrooge walked out with a growl. The office was closed in a twinkling. The clerk, with the long ends of his white comforter dangling below his waist, for he boasted no greatcoat, went down a slide on Corn Hill at the end of a lane of boys 20 times, in honour of it being Christmas Eve, and then ran home to Camden Town as fast as he could pelt to play at Blind Man's Buff.